Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to Owen Explains It All, a new show under the BAMP Podcast Network of podcasts. And because branding is very important, hang on just one second. That is your assurance that you're listening to a high quality podcast. And I think the 3D effect really adds something to it, doesn't it? Kind of draws.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
So directly to this side of me, you will see a publicity still for Suicide Squad. Not Suicide Squad 2, but we all know that it is. And directly.
The Suicide Squad.
Yes, the is very important.
Le.
Tells you where to put it when you're trying to alphabetically place things in the video store.
It goes right after the first one. So clever. Directly beneath me is Owen Casey Stevens. How you doing, Owen?
Hi, folks. I'm doing well. I'm good.
Awesome. Beneath Owen is Jacob Leckman, frequent co-host here on BAMF. How you doing, sir?
Always a pleasure.
Oh. And this is Owen's show. Owen's the star, and he explains it all. And today, Owen, what are you going to be explaining?
I'm going to explain how you can take some elements from the Suicide Squad and use them in your Starfinder game, either thematically or possibly game mechanically. And I'm kind of excited about this because there is nothing in pop culture as close to Starfinder, as popular as superhero movies. Right? Starfinder has magic and it has advanced technology and it has aliens, and you don't get that mix of things in most big movies and TV shows, right? There's lots of stuff like it out there in other mediums, right? If you've got 40K or Shadowrun, or there's a ton of sci-fi fantasy stuff jammed together. But in the big popular media, pretty much the only place you find magic and advanced science and aliens and heroes and small unit tactics all crammed together into one tasty, tasty, chunky stew is superhero movies. So Suicide Squad is the most recent. The Suicide Squad is the most recent of those to be pretty big and popular. And I want to talk about how you can lift elements from it. And then you can use those ideas for any superhero kind of setting. How you can look at a superhero story and say, okay, what can I take from that for Starfinder without it necessarily feeling in any way like I'm trying to do a superhero trope.
You know, that's an interesting observation you make. You're right. It never occurred to me before.
So. Well, I did a whole lot of superhero gaming starting when I was much younger. In fact, I started everything I was doing when I was much younger. I played a lot of Champions. I played some Marvel, the Phase Rip. And now I do a lot of Mutants and Masterminds. And while I personally work for Green Ronin, I don't have anything to do with the Mutants and Masterminds line. But I do publish Mutants and Masterminds stuff created by that person right there. So I had, when I was working on Starfinder, I really was already looking at how that can adapt concepts from superheroes. And in fact, on my blog, owencaseystevens.com, I periodically talk about Freedom Finder, which is a not yet extant conceptual version of Starfinder that would be a superhero genre style of game.
I really admire the way you're kind of the one-man OGL force behind Starfinder. That's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of people that contributed very importantly to Starfinder. But I am probably the most prolific third-party Starfinder publisher who also happened to be on the Starfinder team. That said, one of the reasons I get away with that is that Alex Agunas, who does Everybody Games, was kind enough to partner with us. So as a publisher, I have the benefit of being the publisher for his studio. And he has done even more Starfinder stuff than I have. So
it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, being able to combine our forces, we have put out a lot of Starfinder third-party content.
Sweet, sweet. And usually at this point in the show, when someone says combine their forces, I have a compulsion to make a Wonder Twins joke. But today, I'm going to be strong and not do that.
Well, that's okay. I'll do it.
Okay. As
I mean, it always feels like form of King Kong with wings of a scorpion tail, shape of a bucket of water. So,
all right. I thought you were just going to let it go there. It's kind of a subtle reference, but you went all the way. I love that about you.
No. Yeah, that's.
I'm sorry, if you can turn into water in any solid, liquid, or gaseous form like he can, that is an amazing superpower.
It is, which is just proof that the writers were not putting any effort into it whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, anything Iceman can do, he could do. Anything that any of the Hydrokinetics can do in various comics, he could do just directly, personally. And they just pretty much went with bucket of water. Mm-hmm. And also, when he becomes a bucket of water, does he weigh less than he does normally? Because you usually become a bucket of water so they can pick him up and fly off with him. But is he really that much easier to transport as a bucket of water? Anyway, that would be what explains it all for Super Friends of the Wonder Twins. That's a DC property, but it's not this DC property. Spoiler alert, we're talking about the most recent Suicide Squad movie, The Suicide Squad, although I personally think they should have called it Suicide Squads, because after Alien, they did Aliens, and after Predator, they did Predators, and I think they should have called it the Suicide Squads, and it would have been an in-joke, but, you know, that's why I don't work in Hollywood. But we're going to be discussing about details well beyond just the stuff that you're seeing in the trailer here, so if you haven't seen the movie yet, and you care, and those are both important, then, you know, spoilers. Otherwise, if you're just willing to hear whatever we have to say, jump in and listen to what we've got.
Yep, and in case Owen wasn't quite explicit enough, that's the goddamn spoiler tag. If you don't want to be spoiled, go look at TikTok videos or something. So
yeah, go somewhere else. Okay, so there are a number of fascinating elements about the Suicide Squad. And, you know, we got a tight half hour, and I've used almost a third of it just to say what we're doing. So let's get into it. The first thing that I think someone might want to take from this movie for use in their game is the very setup, right? These are criminals who are being forced with bombs in their heads to go do work for a government. If you're a GM and you have ever had players that you knew that you needed not just a railroad, but an armored lockdown railroad that if they deviated at all, their characters blew up. Obviously, you need buy-in from this concept not to be annoying for anything but a one-shot. But if you said, hey, I'm going to run a game where you are convict soldiers, a thing that has happened in the real world, and if your characters get too far off track, you will literally have a voice in your head warning you that you're going to die if you don't get back to it. That can be great as a setup for a group that needs a really heavy hand keeping them on track. And I'm specifically talking about a group that wants that heavy hand, right? Like, my wife is currently running a Pathfinder game. She's running it tomorrow. Jacob's in it. She has 8 players in a Pathfinder game. If we get too far off track, nothing gets done, and it's a 3-hour slot, and it's once a week, so we have to be snapping along. And if she had said, hey, because there are all of you, and I don't want to get you too far from the plot, I am literally going to have your patron meet you at a tavern, gas you, put all chemical bombs with talking lids in your heads that will tell you when you are deviating from the plot of the adventure path I'm running, I would have been all in on that. Great, we can stick to the adventure. We won't waste any time doing stuff we're not supposed to be doing. And that gives the GM the option. If you're a player and you're like, well, it seems like it should have taken longer to get here than it did, so I don't know if that means there's some sort of weird time dilation, and it's just the player and the GM disagreeing about how long it takes to walk 12 miles through the snow, you can just at that point have your Amanda Waller equivalent come over the comms and say, hey, leave that alone. That's not part of the mission. Just go into the next room. And that gets you straight back to the part that you're probably enjoying. If you're going to do that, you do have to look at how much leeway are you going to give people? Are they going to have fun role-playing this way? But it can also be an opportunity. Sometimes people want to play evil characters, and they don't necessarily want to do evil things. They're evil curious. They want to be evil without doing evil. They want to be able to brood and talk about all the horrible things they did in their background, but they don't, as players, want to be tempted to blow up children. Well, then again, this is an opportunity where you can say, can play the evilest character you want. Just be aware that there's a hard lockdown watching over you, preventing you from doing anything off the track. And if you're going to go that route, I personally would not even give it game mechanics, right? I would say, this is the situation, and unless I tell you something is an opportunity to override the explosive or have it removed or whatever, unless the GM specifically tells you that's an option, if you go off the track, your character's head explodes full stop. That is a built-in part of this campaign. And just be upfront with that.
There is even an option of a non-lethal motivation for characters. It's called the Gaius spell and has existed since the first edition of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, Gaius Quest is a great example of another way you can take that same concept. And I will talk about a little bit about that on my blog tomorrow. I'm going to be using, instead of Suicide Squad, I'm going to refer to Forlorn Hope, because as cool as the term Suicide Squad is, a Forlorn Hope is a band of soldiers or other combatants who have chosen to take on a suicidal assault. And that's an actual real-world term. And I just think Forlorn Hope is way too cool, not to mention in a blog post.
I was in a New Girls cover band for several years called Forlorn Hope.
Well, there you go.
We were very popular in Fort Wayne, Indiana. But I digress. all right. So back to Suicide Squad. Sorry. That's my silly joke.
You know what? If you're popular in a single place as a band, that is a level of success. I realize that we're getting off on things.
Yeah.
As someone that hangs out a lot with creators who do things like, hey, I have the most popular Fate free supplement about playing pirate cats. Don't think that that's not a level of success. If you've got the most popular anything, if you're, no matter how small the pool, if you have gotten success within that, that's something to tout and be proud of. But back to the Suicide Squad. There's a second element that I think is particularly fascinating in this movie that I want to discuss as a possible mechanical. And that is Idris Elba's character, Bloodsport. His armor is covered in little modules of technology, and they seem to be built into the armor. Yeah. And he can pop them out, clip them together, and turn them into all sorts of different weapons. And these range from little grapple lines to pistols to, at one point, a huge weapon with a big spinning thing at the end that he is using to shoot at a kaiju. That is obviously some sort of, to kind of go back to my champion's rooms, that's sort of a multi-power, a variable power pool. That is a thing that he has so many options he can use in each day. And then when they're up, he has used them all. Because Starfinder has leveled equipment, it would not be difficult to be able to say, hey, your equipment can form three pieces of equipment of your level plus two, three pieces of your level plus one, three pieces of your level, and three pieces below your level. We'll look at the numbers and what they would mean more when I talk about it on the blog tomorrow. And set that up as, I can only have one of these going at a time, but if what I need is the grappler, that's a low-level piece of equipment, but it will let me swing over this line, or what I need is a flight pack or jump boots, whatever, I can have those listed out. I personally would not ever recommend you let people pick any equipment at the table. Maybe they can change it when they gain a level. That makes sense. But there are so many equipment options in Starfinder that if you tell someone your six-level character can have any one six-level piece of equipment you pick during play, the game may grind to a halt for half an hour as they flip through the armory and then near space and then the galaxy exploration manual, because they're pretty sure there's one piece of equipment that will fix this problem.
Fair enough. Yeah, I was thinking about that, considering in his background, he's supposed to have taken out Superman with a shot at one point.
A kryptonite bullet, specifically.
I was thinking that a lot of these component pieces he has could have been him switching his weapon into the alien Bane cannon that he had initially used on Superman, because there was suddenly an alien kaiju in front of him.
Right.
So he assembled all the pieces for his alien Bane gun to shoot it.
And
that's the perfect graft weapon that Starfinder already has in its mechanics.
And I think the way to do that, instead of giving someone a piece of equipment that does all these things, I think what you want to do is create an archetype. Because that is going to function more like a class power than like equipment, right? You want someone to still have regular equipment. Starfinder, for better or for worse, is a treasure and credit-driven game. You don't want someone to be so separated with a separate set of equipment that they never get excited when they pick up a new grenade or a gun, whatever. But if you do it as an archetype, then any character class can take it. It starts to come in at second level, and you can just say, okay, it's going to be useful this many times a day at second, and it's going to be useful this many times a day at fourth, and it'll have this additional use at sixth. And I will go into more detail about how I think you would want to do that at the blog tomorrow. But I think if you want to do, I mean, it's almost an artificer character, right? They make a big deal out of the fact that he and Peacemaker are so similar. But the one place, other than attitude and language, the one place where they are radically different is that Peacemaker is carrying whatever he has on his hip, and Bloodsport can make all these different things that do what he needs them to at that moment.
Yeah.
And I think while he is clearly a soldier-style character, or maybe an operative-style character, you could have that concept for a Technomancer or a Vanguard or a Biohacker. In fact, it might work better for some of the sort of science engineer or mechanic-type concepts. And if you're going with the Bloodsport concept, at the end of the day, he runs out, right? He's trying to find one more module on his armor he can use. And it's all built into his armor, and we've got armor upgrades in Starfinder. So all those elements, you got to figure out exactly how you want to put them together. But those are all things when you're looking at any superhero with gear, you can look at how do I use the level-based item equipment system to emulate that. Similarly, you know, if someone wants to be able to fly, and you can say, well, all right, jump jet boots are second level. So at second level, you can fly as well as those. And then at each level, you can pick one piece of equipment and you can fly that well. And then if someone wants to play Iron Man, you can say, okay, as an archetype, we're going to give you Iron Man, or maybe you're going to play the experimental armor mechanic from Character Operations Manual. But you will just keep upgrading to level appropriate gear to replace these slots. And that lets the people get better, but the gear becomes a class level mechanic that remains locked to an effective level of the campaign so that they are flying however much flight is appropriate, or they're able to create a force field that is as strong as is appropriate at that level. And there are drawbacks to that level system, and I could go off on a rant about that. But this is one of the places where it could be really great to be able to say, hey, your special power is that you can fill your armor slot with any one armor upgrade up to this level, and with a week of downtime, so anytime we're doing starship travel or you level, you can change it, and you can get that kind of flexible, can-do-anything-under-the-right-circumstances gear power without having to constantly decide what is appropriate for how much you can fly, how much you can teleport, how much you can shoot, etc. Jacob, talk for a sec.
like I was saying, with the cannons, that was something that was the idea I had with the grass. Otherwise, if you want to get into some of the other characters, you can easily see a lot of the archetypes that might be available. Nanoe, King Shark, is obviously, you know, a big giant Vesk who's taken a lot of impervious adding traits and abilities and cyberware and bioware
to make
him just the toughest thing around.
In fact, if I wanted to do King Shark, I would specifically start with a Vesk, and then I would play a Vanguard, because the Vanguard class and have him focus on unarmed strikes and close in combat. The Vanguard class in Starfinder is all about getting hit, absorbing the impact of getting hit, and turning it into other powers you have. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a great way to build that character. I think you're exactly right. I think you can obviously look at Harley and say that is obviously some kind of operative.
Absolutely.
And And being an operative means that she is often looking for the trick attack. And you can even say, well, she's clearly using acrobatics for her trick attack. And that's how you build that. Yes, she's taking apart experienced soldiers and Marines and diving through the eye of giant monsters, because that acrobatics is just the special effect of her trick attack. Yeah. I personally would, if I was going to look at Ratcatcher 2, I would write that up as a technomancer and focus on some summoning spells and just say she's summoning a bunch of rats.
And they just happen to be the focus of whatever the spell effect is,
right?
Whether that's damage or moving things. Yeah.
Well, and you know, you could say, okay, but rats are only going to be, you know, a first level summoning. And then you just say, well, while we will use the stat block for whatever you can summon with a second level summon creature, third level summon creature, what that is a pile of 30 rats or a pile of 50 rats or a pile of 70 rats, right? We see in the movie, there's a point where the rats are flooding like a wave across the city because rats significantly outnumber people in cities. Yeah. And that's just a case where the GM and the player get together and the player says, you know, I really want to, and you can make that anything, right? I want to have the blob from the blob that comes out of an extra dimensional space and does my bidding. You can do that with the exact same build. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to do, you could do it with a witch warper and have all of your environmental effects, right? It's dark. Why is it dark? Because the rats are blocking out the sun. Exactly. Why is it difficult terrain? Because you're constantly stepping on rats.
Yeah.
And this is how you could do Squirrel Girl too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah,
100%. Absolutely. The other thing with Squirrel Girl is that you probably want a hero point system, because clearly, and I've got a hero point system for Starfinder on my blog, so you can go on owencaseystevens.com and type in Starfinder hero points, and that system will come up. Because if you give people hero points for being funny and entertaining and helping with the campaign, then you can have a Squirrel Girl-like character just because the player is someone that is constantly amusing the table. And I think a player that makes their turn fun for other players is just worth their weight in gold, and I love rewarding that kind of person. Because one of the biggest problems for a tabletop role-playing game can be when you get bored because it's not your turn. And if some player is engaging to make their turn fun to watch, fun to listen to, they're constantly doing setups. Yeah, I mean, that is a giant mass of squirrels defeating Dr. Doom, right? That could just as easily be a wall of force where the special effect is an endless supply of squirrels. In that case, probably each one carrying a little rock so they don't get injured.
Fair enough. And I guess it bears saying, because it's a comics podcast here sometimes, if you haven't read Unbeatable Squirrel Girl by Ryan North, wow, it's the most delightful thing Marvel's put out in a couple of years.
So it's just delight.
Yep, the trades are out there. Anyway, back to Suicide Squad.
So the last thing I want to hit on in the last few minutes here is Starro. If you don't know, Starro is a classic DC Silver Age, I'm pretty sure, villain, might date back to the Golden Age.
The very first villain that the Justice League ever fought.
The very first villain that Justice League star. It's a giant starfish that sends out little psychic versions of itself that bolt onto people's faces and mind controls them. One of the great uses for that in the comics over the years have been to do things like, you can't beat up Superman, you can't outrun Superman, but Superman is not immune to mind control. So one of the plot elements you can play with, and yeah, here's the Suicide Squad version of Starro as an enormous kaiju. And they made a really disturbing and yet still pretty comic book accurate version of him, because he sprays thousands of those tiny little Starro face huggers out of those vents, and it's very organic and disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
I will also, and I won't spoil this, Starro's last line in this movie actually moved me. Mm. So this is a movie that, for all its goofiness, for all its over-the-topness, it's got stuff I don't like, right? There's a lot of simulated animal abuse in this movie, and that's just not entertaining or funny to me. But this movie still made me feel bad about the fate of a starfish kaiju mind controller, and that is worth mentioning. So at that level, he's a kaiju. I think it is worth talking about if you want to fight a kaiju. There are all the little starfish spraying out of one of his armpits, and that is just really disturbing. So get that off the screen. Wow.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, fair enough. It's gone.
I will not be able to think to talk if I am looking at those little round pustule dimples turning into flying starship. I think it's important that if you want to do something in Starfinder, like fight a kaiju, you need to be ready to either not put it on a battle mat at all and just say, hey, you're this many feet away, you're that many feet away, or do battle mats where you say, hey, instead of 1 inch being 5 feet, 1 inch is 30 feet, or 1 inch is 120 feet. And there are things like sniper weapons and the ability to be ridiculously fast and vehicle rules that are hard to play with at the 5 foot per inch level. So having a giant kaiju is a great excuse to pull out those bigger scales. And then if someone has a sniper weapon and they can become, you know, one range increment becomes 250 feet and they say, well, it's a quarter mile away. And they're like, wait, I might be able to hit that. That is a fun moment for the people that have gone into those options. The other part is the mind control, and that we just saw the shot of the Justice League with Starro things in their face. They did something in this movie that I think was specifically designed to dodge ethical questions, in that they established early on that in this version of Starro, when he mind controls someone, it's a corpse under there. That person is already dead. And that specifically means that people didn't have to feel bad about killing the civilian populace after they were mind controlled.
Yeah.
You can go that route if you want your players to not have to have ethical concerns. Whatever you do, it's a case where I like to be clear about things, right? Jacob was talking earlier about the possibility of non-lethal things, right? So you could specifically set things up, a mind control plot line, to say, hey, these people have been mind controlled. You can't kill them or seriously hurt them. And then people that have taken weapons that have the stun option, or they have to take the penalty to do non-lethal, or they're just using smoke grenades, which are the most overpowered first-level piece of equipment in all of Starfinder, they get options. So again, that's the sort of thing where you can take that plot and use it to make things that were perhaps non-peak options much more valuable for that fight. I also think it's a great opportunity to play with things like saying, okay, this mob is 5,000 people crammed into here, and I'm not calling that 5,000 attacks. I'm saying that this is difficult terrain, and every round you have to make a reflex save or take damage. There are so many people that we treat as a trap. And then maybe you say, and if you attack the mob, you don't have to do that for one round. So I can throw a grenade in, and then for one round I've made a hole, and that's how you can do it. And you can do that with hordes of zombies, waves of xenomorphs, whatever it is that you want 8 million of in a fight. You just don't do them as individual creatures. You do them as hazards and terrain.
Yeah, we just had a similar experience to that in the Forgotten Lands RPG we played earlier today. Last session, we were attacked by a flock of harpies. And we didn't strike at individual harpies. We had to defeat the flock.
Right. So, yeah. Same concept. And so those are all things you can be inspired by, and a few hints on how you can take things from a superhero movie, in this case, a supervillain movie, The Suicide Squad, and adapt them as non-superhero sci-fi fantasy elements for your Starfinder game. And I have explained it.
All right. Well done, Warren. Why do I call you Warren? Owen, I'm sorry. Owen, I've been that for like a year now. Please forgive me.
Yeah, it's totally fine. We do this at, you know, 10:30 my time, nearly that late your time. So we're all a little shot by it. This is the goofy show. We are all a little goofy by the time we get to this.
I loved that episode.
Yeah, I'm showing a still from the Robot Chicken.
Chicken DC Comics Special. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of musical bits on that, which were pretty funny.
I agree. And I found, I know we just had a really disturbing picture of of Starro, but Starro. This, good Lord, I don't know what's going on here. I kind of want to know, but.
Starro, I mean, as Robin. Okay.
Yeah, very, very clearly.
Because, you know, who else could be Robin? Batman just recruits them off the street when he needs a new one.
I'm pretty sure that's Damian Wayne's uniform, but I could be wrong.
Oh! Well, then I don't care.
You know, any comic book character can be redeemed with a good writer at a little time.
Uh-huh.
That's jar. I'm gonna have to Google this later. So, all right, we are at the half hour mark, and I promised Owen when we first pitched this show it was gonna be a tight, funny
tight half hour.
Half hour. So we are there. Any closing thoughts, folks, before we wrap this up?
I'll be talking about how to do things with the Forlorn Hope concept and the archetype that gives you interchangeable gear at my blog tomorrow on ownconceitsdemons.com. And there will be a little extra content for my patrons over at my Patreon, which will be linked to, you know, from the article.
Sounds good. Jacob, closing thoughts.
Speaking of Patreon, if you enjoy content like this, please support the Banff Podcast Patreon.
Indeed.
And you'll get more of all of this, plus live streaming RPGs, comics talk, movie talk, and more.
Well, we're like public television for geeks. And on that happy note, let's play our outro. Does that sound like an early Metallica riff to you guys?
Yes. Yeah, I know it sounds better than Metallica.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, hey, thanks everyone for checking out Owen Explains It All. We'll be back in 2 weeks talking about more pop culture craziness a la Starfinder. So thanks, Owen. Thanks, Jacob. We will see y'all next week. Or 2 weeks, I just said it. My bad.
Bye, folks.
Bye, folks.